Troy Phillips was repairing a propane filling station on Cape Cod last October when his mother called.
And I could barely understand what she was saying. She was just, something happened to Scott. Something happened to Scott.
Scott is Troy's younger brother, and he'd been rushed to the hospital.
I'm thinking, okay, he drives a truck, must have maybe gotten an accident or something. And then she just, he died.
At Rhode Island Hospital, Troy learned that his 46-year-old brother had collapsed inside a Subway sandwich shop in Cranston. The death certificate says the cause of death was hypertensive cardiovascular disease. Troy is a volunteer firefighter and licensed emergency medical technician, or EMT. And in the months since his brother's death, Troy has been trying to piece together what happened the day Scott died. But he keeps hitting a wall.
We're trying to find out what happened on the 911 call. That's what we want to know.
Paul Casey knows part of the story. He's director of emergency medical services in Cranston.
What do you know about what happened before you got there?
I don't. They dispatched the trucks out, but we really don't know what's going on until we show up.
Casey says the only information he has about what happened before his firefighter EMTs arrived at the sandwich shop is what they wrote in their report.
We reviewed the case, and they did document that there was not any bystander CPR going on.
No bystander CPR? That's a red flag. Every minute delay in performing CPR on a person in cardiac arrest decreases his or her chances of survival by as much as 10%, according to the American Heart Association. As an EMT, Troy knows that means his brother Scott may have been without oxygen or blood flow to his brain for up to 6 minutes.
What happened from the time the phone call was made to the time the fire department got there? You know, that's what I want to know.
Did the 911 call taker realize that Scott needed CPR? Did the call taker instruct anyone to perform CPR? Did anyone at the sandwich shop try to help Scott? Troy asked his other brother, Jamie, to help. Jamie is a New Hampshire state trooper.
Hey.
Yo, what's up?
Did you find out about the 911 stuff?
Jamie tells Troy that they first need to find out who made the call and then get that person's permission to get a recording of it. Otherwise, they have to hire a lawyer and go to court. Troy says he's called the Subway shop 3 times trying to speak to the manager. The first 2 times, he says, he was told the manager was unavailable. The 3rd time, he says, he was told no comment.
What is the big secret for a family member to be able to hear that tape and know what happened?
Rhode Island is one of roughly a dozen states that prohibit the release of 911 recordings or transcripts without the written consent of the caller or a court order. Adam Marshall is a lawyer for the nonprofit Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press.
Rhode Island is one of the most restrictive states, I would say, when it comes to accessing 911 audio.
But calls for more restrictions are growing. This year, bills to prohibit or restrict access to 911 recordings were introduced in Massachusetts, New York, Tennessee, and Texas.
Over the last few years, access has decreased across the United States generally, often because legislatures have enacted new restrictions to 911 audio.
In Rhode Island, those restrictions were enacted more than 2 decades ago, after a local TV station broadcast a 911 call from the wife of a public official.
What's the problem?
Yes, I do.
What's the problem?
My husband.
Mm-hmm.
Just beat on me.
The woman whose voice you heard was at the time married to a top prosecutor in the state attorney general's office when Channel 10 broadcast his wife's 911 call. The attorney was never charged, which the TV station reported raised questions about whether he was given special treatment by the police because of his public position. A town investigation later cleared the police of any misconduct. Meanwhile, outrage over the call's broadcast spurred one of the most restrictive statutes in the country. Among the supporters of the 1996 law was the Rhode Island chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Steve Brown is the organization's executive director.
There were really important privacy values in not having these often very intimate types of calls just available to everybody in the public.
But without access to those calls, people like Troy Phillips don't know what the 911 operators are telling callers in cases like his brother's.
By having access to 911 audio, the public can begin to understand how events unfolded.
That's Marshall, the media lawyer. Marshall says 911 calls also are often a primary source of information following emergencies like floods, mass shootings, and fires. After the deadly Station nightclub fire in 2003, the Providence Journal sued the town of West Warwick for access to public safety records, including 911 calls made during the fire. 100 people died and more than 200 were injured in the blaze, which raised questions about the state's ability to manage mass casualties. Joe Cavanaugh is a Providence lawyer who represented the newspaper in the case.
We tried to get those records, not for sensationalism reasons, but to just see what type of dialogue took place. In what way did the police and fire officials respond? Did they respond promptly?
We may never know. That's because the judge withheld recordings of more than two dozen 911 calls. The Station nightclub case is one of the reasons why Brown of the ACLU thinks the 911 law needs a second look.
There should be some sort of good cause mechanism so that there can be an informed balancing of the interests rather than just deciding on the one hand these should always be public versus these should never be public, even though release of them might in fact help provide some oversight over how 911 is handling calls.
For Troy, knowing what happened on the 911 call for his brother is personal.
Being a firefighter and being that me and my brother makes me feel horrible.
Scott Phillips was a bear of a man with a strawberry blonde goatee who liked to make people laugh.
Actually, the last time I saw him, he was on his four-wheeler doing a wheelie because I told him his fat ass couldn't do a wheelie. That's exactly how I said it to him, and then he turned around and did a wheelie right past me. So, that was the last time I said, I'll see you later. And then the next time, and then down the phone call.
At Scott's funeral, several hundred people showed up. Firefighters and police officers, some in uniform, packed the funeral home and spilled out the doors. For the Publix Radio and the ProPublica Local Reporting Network, I'm Lynn Arditti.